All three gimel, you're fat. How many gimels are there? How many gimels?
One.
That's what I meant. I meant. You mean there's somebody who's really here trying to gimel?
Yeah.
Oh, what a place Yeshiva Nakotel is. Unbelievable. Okay, how many alumni are back? How many alumni? Just a couple of alumni? Okay, so this is Shana Alpha and Shana Bet mainly. How many Shana Bet? What are you doing? Sammy's here. Okay, I was going to tell you, I was going to email you that I'm going to be in Rosh Hashanah today, but you said Sunday or Monday. Okay, you're fat. Okay, I'd like to introduce a good friend of mine, Michael Raskis, who's here. He's going to be speaking today. Sammy, how's your year going here?
Great.
You're enjoying it?
Yeah.
What do you not like about it? Okay, let me tell you, it's really a pleasure to be here in this wonderful learning establishment. Does anybody have a watch?
Yeah.
Does anybody have a watch? Let me have a watch. Okay. Let me just start with 5 minutes fast. You're a real balabas. I tell you, that is good training. That is good training. Let me start by sharing with you my experience of walking into Taha Kotel today. Please, all recording things come here. There was a snowstorm last month. You guys were here for the snowstorm last month? So, I'm from New York. Usually when there's a snowstorm, actually I'm from Manhattan, there's a snowstorm, the streets are cleared the next day. And after the streets are plowed, they salt the streets. And by salting the streets, they make sure there's no ice, there's no, the water's gone, everything's wonderful. Here in Israel, we have a special place, it's a holy place, where they just plow the streets without salting the streets. And therefore, there's a nice sheen veneer of ice that's left. And I fell on that ice going to Minyan, which has raised many theological questions about Shulchei Mitzvah and Nizakin, which I'm not going to talk about here. But because of that, I have I've been walking very slowly. Actually, it's the first week I'm walking, and without crutches. And I left my house early to come here, because usually you just rush to the end and run over here, because I knew I'd have to walk through the old city and I'd have to walk through at a slow pace. And walking through the old city at a slow pace just now was just such an amazing experience. And I was thinking, all the people, all the Jews that are coming here to Yir Atika, and the Americans, and I saw other people who came from the year who came back, and the Chayalim that are here, and the Israelis that are here, and all the different languages here, and I thought, Ashrechem, how fortunate you guys are to be learning in Yir Atika and Yeshiva HaKotel, and how fortunate you are to teach here and to be able to come to Yir Atika every single day. And I know that by January you're not thinking that anymore, because it's already used to and it's already part of your routine. So I just want to add it to your thoughts again. What an unbelievable zchut gedola. A zchut gedola that generations of Jews could only dream of. They couldn't even dream of. For hundreds and hundreds of years, that you guys have a chance to sit right here at the foot of the Kotel and just spend your days learning Torah. I mean, it's just mamish amazing. It's amazing. And that was just my walk over here. So let me tell you what I want to talk to you about. This afternoon, I'm going to pick up a trick that I learned from Rabbi Amori Rav Lichtenstein. Rav Lichtenstein, what he'd often do is he'd be asked to speak in different occasions, and he'd present them a title. And then he'd spend the first couple of minutes being Doresh his own title. That's a clever chop. So my title is New Tools and Strategies for Learning Gemara in the 21st Century. So I want to explain a little bit what that means. First of all, the word new. The word new is actually a misnomer. For what we're going to be speaking about today is actually not new. These are not new tools or strategies that were founded recently or just created, but they're very old. But the reason why I wrote new is because they're going to be new to you. And it's an amazing historical piece to think about, which I want to talk about, is why is it that these tools and strategies have been forgotten? Why is it that what I'm going to say is going to be new to you? What happened in the history of halacha that what we're going to talk about is something new, when in fact it's definitely very old? That's the first thing. The second thing is learning Gemara. I'm actually not going to talk about learning Gemara. I'm going to be talking about learning how Rishonim learned Gemara. How to learn Gemara, there are actually very new strategies and tools that are new, but I'm not talking about that. That perhaps is a different topic. It's true that it's not my area. I want to talk to you about how to learn the Rishonim on the Gemara. And lastly, the 21st century. The final note is that whatever the reasons are that these tools and strategies have been forgotten, there's a reason today, dafka today, in our period, where it's particularly conducive to remember them and apply them to our learning. What I'm really suggesting is that we're on the cusp. Right now, you all are sitting here on the cusp of a new learning era that I predict is going to take place. And I think it's going to be based on some of the things we're going to talk about today. So instead of just talking about it, what I wanted to do with you was learn a sugya with you and focus on one particular Rishon, because we don't have that much time. So I picked a sugya that I'm presently working in, and Avodah Zarah, Samach Dalet Amud Bet. And I picked Rashi as an example of a Rishon, just to show you an example of some things that that we can do. So let's start. If you look in Samach Dalet Amud Bet, everybody have the Gemara? Yes? Samach Dalet Amud Bet. There's a Braisa that starts. Meitve Ezehu Gertoshev. You see the little Dalet? With the parentheses and that funny circle? Yes? Yes or no? Everybody got it? Okay, Ezehu Gertoshev. What does a Gertoshev have to do to become a Gertoshev? So let's just take a break, step back for a second. What is a Gertoshev? Anybody know what's a Gertoshev? Yeah. Your name is?
Justin.
Justin, where are you from, Justin?
Merrick, New York.
Merrick, New York. I don't know anybody from Merrick, New York.
Okay.
There you go, Justin. We're best friends already. Good.
Gertoshev who accepts the Shabbos when they know how to live in Israel.
Okay, so what people would generally think, Yafet, it's excellent, Justin, is that a Gertoshev is a non-Jew who accepts the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, right, the Noachide code, and he's the one non-Jew who's allowed to live in Israel, correct? Yes, okay, good. We'll work with that. It's actually much more complicated. We're going to go with that definition for now. That's what Gertoshev is. He's the non-Jew who's able to live in Israel. But let's go on further. So what does a non-Jew have to do in order to be able to become a Gertoshev? Justin said accept the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, but we're going to see that it's actually a machlokas. The first opinion is, Kol shekibol ala b'fnei gimel chaverim shelo la'avod avodah zara. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Anyone who accepts on himself before three chaverim not to worship Avodah Zarah. That's what Rabbi Meir says. How do you become a Gertoshev? You have to go in front of three people and say, I accept not to worship Avodah Zarah. He gets the stamp, he's a Gertoshev. With Justin's definition, he gets a visa and he's able to go into Israel. But Chachamim Omrim, Kol Shekibah Lav Sheva Mitzvah Shekibah Alayim B'nei Noach. Anyone who accepts the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach. Acherim Omrim, the Acherim say, Elu lo ba'i l'chlal gertoshav. These two opinions do not capture what you need to do to become a gertoshav. Ela ezu gertoshav ze ger ochal nevelot shekibul av l'kayim kol ha-mitzvot ha-amurot batara chutz me isur nevelot. Now, what I want to focus on for you is the third opinion. With you is the third opinion. What is the third opinion in this braita? What would you guys say? What's the third opinion? First is he can't. Well, he has to accept not to have a rozar. The second one is shemitz bnei noach. What's the third one? Say again. Kol Torah kula, except nevelot. Anybody have any idea why they would exclude nevelot? Anybody have any idea? Yeah.
I don't have a philosophical reason, but in the Torah it does talk about feeding nevelot to the gerim that live in the Eretz.
I was looking for that, but if you have a philosophical reason, I'm curious about that too. Your name is?
David Parnas.
Where are you from?
St. Louis and then Baltimore.
Wow, St. Louis. That explains it all. Okay, so David. So, excellent. So David points out that it says in the Torah that you shouldn't eat nevelot. Rather, what should you do? What should you do with them? Either you could limkor l'nachri, sell it to nachri, or you can give it to Legera Sheb B'Sharecha. And what's the ger shebisharecha? So David correctly points out that in the oral tradition, that's understood to mean ger toshav. So there's an explicit pasuk that says that ger toshav is allowed to eat nevelot. So according to this third opinion, what a ger toshav has to do is accept the whole Torah except for nevelot. Right? Okay. Now, tell me, look at Rashi for a second. And can anyone tell me what Rashi's girsa of this gemara is? Or can anybody tell me if this was Rashi's girsa of the gemara? Yeah. Say again. What does Rashi say on Kol She'ochel Nevelot? So first of all, you notice what? What does our gemara say? Zeger ochel nevelot, and you pointed out, what does Rashi say? Kol she ochel nevelot, yifeh. What else does Rashi say? Rashi gives a hesber. What's the hesber that Rashi gives? This isn't a trick question. What hesber? Even if you're not from St. Louis, you can answer it. He keeps the rest of the mitzvot. Now, how do I know if Rashi says that he keeps the rest of the mitzvot, that Rashi must have had a different girsa of this Gemara? How would I know that? Because the Gemara says it explicitly. Why does Rashi have to explain something that's already in the Gemara? What's Rashi adding when he says, Rishar kol mitzvot smikayim, when it's explicitly in the Gemara, kol mitzvot mor dar chutz me, it says kol mitzvot mor spetora. So what's Rashi adding over here? Yeah?
Also Torah
Shabbat Peh. If anything else that Rashi's adding? That's amazing. Your name is?
Avi
Manich. Avi. What else? Anything else that Rashi's adding? David.
You're not allowed to give them wine to the lobby
view. No, the wine is going to come later. That's actually the second part. So you're ready. You're thinking ahead, David. We'll get there. Okay, so the reason why I want to take what Avi said is that's a classic. What Avi did correctly is everything he was trained to do. He was trained to look at this problem and come up with a conceptual solution of why Rashi's adding Shaar Kol HaMitzvos when it's Pashut, it's explicitly in the Gemara. Right? Yafeh. This isn't the Gemara that Rashi had in front of him. This wasn't the text that Rashi had in front of him. It wouldn't make sense for it to be the text that Rashi had in front of him. And in fact, I know it's not the text that Rashi had in front of him. Because I looked at all the Kitzvayad, the manuscripts that we have of the Gemara and Avodah Zarah, and you find that none of them have this text that you have in your Vilna Shas. If you look at the Gemara, there are three, I put four. And source in source sheet number one. Meisvei, you see that? Ezu Ger Toshav. Let's start with the first one. The first one is JTS Rabbinic 15. It's a very important kitveyad, a manuscript of all of Masechet Avodah Zarah that was written in 1290. Meisvei, Ezu Ger Toshav, Kol Shekibla B'fnei Shlosha, Shalom la'avod avodah zarah divrei meh, v'cham amrim kol shi'il Hashem mitzvah shal kibbol m'nei noach, acherim omrim, elu ve'elu lo bay l'chlal ger toshav, maybe we'll do that later, ela ezu ger toshav, Rabbi Yehuda omer, zer ger ochal nevelot. That's it. Zer ger ochal nevelot. Look at Munich 95. It's an important Ashkenaz kitveyad, importantly because it's written after Rashi actually. Look what it says. Meisvei, Ezu Ger Toshav, Kol Shiva Shol Avod Avodah Zarah, Dibur Reb Meir, Chama Roshi Lav Shem Mitzvah Shiva B'nei Noach, Acher Ma'elu Lo Bay Lecha Ger Toshav, Hale Ezu Ger Toshav, Reb Yudah Omer, Ochel Nevelot. Look at Paris 1337. Paris isn't where it's from. Paris is the university that it's in, but it's the 14th century. Mesa was written in the 14th century. I think it was Ashkenaz. Mesa ve'ezu ger toshav kol shekibla b'nei shloshah she'ino avodah zarah divrei meir chama kol shekibla shav mishkibla b'nei noach acher ma'ela lo ba'ilchal ela ezu ger toshav Rabbi Yehuda omer zeh ger ochel nevelot. There is no manuscript that we know of that has the text of the Gemara that you have in front of you. So how did that happen? Yeah.
Well, maybe there was a Gemara with Rashi in it, and when it was copied down, someone put in Rashi's comments as the Gemara.
If Avi.
No.
As Avi.
Then.
Then. then you would have said the two Avi. Ben is 100% right. Rashi is not just mushba on the Gemara. Rashi is mashpia on the Gemara. Rashi doesn't just read a Gemara and interpret it, but what happens is after he reads a Gemara and interprets it, he's so mikubal, what often, or not often, but what sometimes happens is that his parish gets written inside the Gemara. And then you don't even know that it's his parish. If you look at Pizarro in 1515, you already see the change. In the 16th century, this is one of the first prints. The printing press started at the end of the 15th century, beginning of the 16th century. This is one of the first prints. Look what it says. Meis ve'ezeh gertosh shim v'shalav v'rozeh d'rav meir. Chom ha'kosho v'shemesh shekibu la'em b'nei noach. Chem ha'me'elo b'ay l'cha gertosh v'ezeh gertosh v'zeh zeh ger ochon l'veil shekibu la'em l'kayim kol mitzos amurus b'tor achutz mitzir n'veilot. Already in the 16th century, Rashi's parish was in there. But nobody had that Gemara in the medieval era. Nobody had this Gemara like this in medieval era. So the first thing I want to tell you is that if you want to learn Rashi, the first thing you need to know is what? What was the text in front of Rashi? What's Rashi responding to? Okay? And it's very important if you want to understand Rashi and if you want to understand other people. What was the text in front of any Rishon that you're studying? Right? If you have a machlokes between Rashi and somebody else, or take this, this is a classic one. You could find the conceptual, I could totally see a sefer writing this, that Rashi's coming to add the Torah Shabbat Be'ah. I could totally see somebody writing that. When really what's happening is that that wasn't what was in front of Rashi. So if you want to understand him, and what you have to know, the girsa that was in front of him. Kim'at, if you now notice, every single page of the Gemara you're going to see, it says Rashi has Hachi Garsinan. It says Hachi Garsinan. You know what that means when Rashi says Hachi Garsinan? What does that mean?
He's changing the girsa of the Gemara.
He's changing the girsa of the Gemara.
Sometimes it's the same one we have.
Exactly. Yafeh, Ben. Good. He's changing the girsa of the Gemara, and then sometimes you look at the Gemara, and it's the same one. So what's Rashi changing it from? Now that may not be influenced by Rashi. It could be that it was influenced by another manuscript. It doesn't have to. It's not always Rashi who's the mashpia. But the point is, if you want to understand Rashi, you have to know what he's rejecting too. What are the other girsos out there? What's Rashi rejecting? And if you want to understand machlokot rishonim, sometimes what the machlokis is based on, you know what it's based on? They had different girsas in the Gemara. Right, we come up with totally different conceptual reasons, and they could also apply, by the way. I'm not negating that. But the first step is, what was in front of them? What were they responding to? What's the girsa that they had? That's pashut, that is aleph beis. It should be aleph beis of learning Gemara. Yes?
Did none of these three have kol she'erich al nevedas either?
Say again?
Rashi's tilamasko is kol she'erich al nevedas, but none of these three...
It could be that Rashi had a different girsa himself than he had kol. And that's important to see Rashi when Rashi quotes a Gemara. That's an important issue to put in. When I say these are the three manuscripts, we should be clear. Well, how is the Gemara transmitted? Meaning in the medieval era. These are the three manuscripts that we have. There were 100 manuscripts. I don't know how many manuscripts there were of this Gemara. This is the only thing that's left in our possession. You know what I'm saying? So it's very important, meaning I can only take the material that I have. But seeing the quotes of the Rishonim are very important to figure out the girsa also. The Rishonim are another aid. They're another witness to what the text says. Okay? Yafeh. Very good. Your name is?
Eli.
Okay. So that's one. We don't have that much time, so I want to move and give you a couple of lessons. Let's look at the next half of the Gemara. Okay, the next half of the Braisa that David said was talking about Yayin. So now let's go back to your Vilna Shas. That's important. This is the Vilna Shas. This is the Vilna print. Okay, this is a version of your Gemara. This isn't the Talmud. It's a version of the Talmud. Okay, let's go back to the Braisa. What does the Braisa say? Okay, Chutz Mister Nevelos. Everybody with me? Miyachten Etzlo Yayin with the little vav. You see that Miyachten? Everybody see that? Okay, Miyachten Etzlo Yayin. Ve'ein Mafkidin Etzlo Yayin. Afilu Beir Sheruba Yisrael. The Gemara is now talking about whether you're allowed to give your wine over to a ger toshav to watch for you. Now, why would you not be allowed to give wine over to a non-Jew? Forget ger toshav for a second. What's the problem with giving over a non-Jew, Justin?
He's going to use it for avodah zarah.
You're afraid he's going to use it for avodah zarah. And any wine that a non-Jew touches, that an idol-worshipping non-Jew touches, what do we call that? Well, stam yeno. Right? If he owns it or touches it, it's stam yeno, and there's a chashash of yayin esech. And that wine is asur bahana. Okay? Now that's if the guy's an idol worshiper. Now the ger toshav is somebody that we know. What do we know about the ger toshav?
He's no longer an idol worshiper.
He's not an idol worshiper. Right? So does the din of stam yeno apply even to a ger toshav? So I'm going to go back these lines. Let me just go forward for a second and we'll back up. Then the Gemara says, Shmeno kiyeno, his oil is like his wine. Shmeno kiyeno, sagadaitach shemen mika havi yayin esech. Ela yeno kishmeno. That the Gemara, the position is that his yayin is like his oil, and it was at the time, the Brice was written, when the shemen of an idol worshiper, or in this case, a ger toshav, was also usur, but it was only usur ba'achila or shtia, but it was mutter for hana. Ulishar called of areyu kigai. By the way, you see that it says areyu kove kochavim? Once you know that that's wrong. I mean, I didn't even have to look at the girsa, but I'm going to look at the other girsas. How do I know that that's wrong? What? Say again? That's the censor word. Your name is?
Noach.
Noach? So Noach says the censor, and you all said that it's usually, it's very rare, even in Masechet Avodah Zarah, for the word Avodat Kochavim to appear. When it does, usually it means the real word is Guy. The censor, that's Mamish, that's a Guy censor came and crossed out a line in the Gemara and wrote a new word in. I mean, that's Mamish, not the Talmud. Meaning that's somebody else. Okay, now there's no validity to that whatsoever. That's somebody who just changed and it could be as late as the 18th century. 18th, 19th century, you have censors crossing things out. So, okay, so you knew that that was Kigai. So his shemen, the first opinion is his wine is usur only the achilu shtia b'mutter farna. Rabbi Shimon Omer yeno yein nesech, meaning it's usur even b'ana. Ra'amila mutter b'shtia, and the third opinion is that it's even permitted to drink. So the three opinions about the ger toshav's own wine. Either his own wine is usur to eat, but permitted to benefit, usur to benefit, or even permitted to eat. That's his own wine. What the issue I want to talk about is not his own wine, but what happens when a Jew gives the ger toshav his wine to watch? Okay, is that allowed or not? So now go back to the middle of this brisa. So the brisa says, Miyachtin etzlo yayin, ve'ein mafkidin etzlo yayin, afilu be'ir shirubi Yisrael, avo miyachtin etzlo yayin, afilu be'ir shirubi avdei kolam. They want to guess what that means? Take a guess there. What is the difference between miyachtin and mafkidin? So one parish is that. Yeah, you want to say?
He knows that he's with the wine, and one that
he doesn't know that he's with the wine. That's interesting. Okay, so one parish. Let's just go one of the basic ways of understanding it is miyachdin is for a short amount of time, and mafkidim is for a long amount of time. When you're mafkid, you're giving it to him to be the shomer. Miyachid, you're telling him, listen, I'm coming back soon. I want you to watch this for me, and then you leave. But you tell him you're leaving. And mafkidin is when you say, can you watch for me for a month? So the halacha is that you can be miyached him, you can give it to him for a short amount of time, but you can't give it to him for a lengthy amount of time. Now, by the way, this isn't really my point here, but can you tell me if this is actually the text that existed in the Brisa, even without knowing anything? Look at that Brisa. Does that make sense to you? You see what happened there?
Like it goes back to the beginning.
It goes back to the beginning. Your name is?
Pinchas.
There's something messed up. There's obviously something confused here. It says, Miyachten etzlo yayin, vein mafkidin etzlo yayin, afil bir shubi Yisrael, avo miyachten etzlo yayin, afil bir shubi avil kachavim. Right? It says, Miyachten, mafkidin, ein mafkidin, miyachten. Something's messed up. And if you look at Rashi, you see already that it wasn't the text of Rashi. What was the text of Rashi? So Rashi had, look at Kol She'ochel Nevelot. You see how it's bolded? Ushar Kol Mitzvah V'Kayim. The next words are Ein Mafkid Etzlein. You see that that's not bolded? Do you know why that's not bolded?
Because it wasn't in Rashi's text.
No, it was a mistake. It should be bolded. Okay, sometimes the Vilna Shas or this edition, you know, when they started bolding the Dibrei Maskil, sometimes they're wrong. This should be bolded. Ein Mafkid Etzlein should be bolded. And Rashi's gears was Ein Mafkid Etzlein is first, and it says Ein Mafkid Etzlein Aval Miyachten Etzlein. You see that? Here, we can look at the three versions. Just again, this is really a side point for me. You already made this point, but if you look at the underlines, I just showed you in the three manuscripts that we have. Miyachdin. Let's skip the brackets for now. Miyachdin ve'ein mafkidin etzolayin afil b'yeshuv Yisrael. Look at Munich. Ve'ein mafkidin etzolayin afil b'yeshuv Yisrael. V'miyachdin imo afil b'yeshuv b'gayim. So you see that there's like a confusion. Which one is first, and how does it work? And in the Vilna Shas, the whole thing got mixed up. But that's really not my point here. My point is, I want you to look at the reason that Rashi gives for each of these halachot. Ein mafkidin etzlo yayin. I'm back in Rashi. You with me, Justin?
I got lost.
Come back to Rashi. Come back with me, Justin. Ein mafkidin etzlo yayin. David, how are we doing over there? You're the quarterback of the back. Everybody with you? Yes? We're good? Avi, we're good? Ellie, who's Ellie? We're good. Okay, ein mafkid enetzlo yayin bebeto. Ein mafkid enetzlo yayin bebeto. Don't leave it to him for a long time. Lizman meruba. Why? This is very important. Deikala mechash lechlufe beyayin shalo. Shu asr kedektani seif yayin kishmenan. Because we're worried, what's the Gertoshev might do if you leave for a long time? Maybe he's going to switch that wine with his wine. Maybe an accident. But maybe he'll switch that wine with his wine. And we already know that his wine is asr, let's say is asr to drink. And then you're going to get messed up. So don't give it to him for a long amount of time. You got it? So why can't you give it for a long amount of time? Because you're worried he's going to mix up with his wine. Remember that. It's very important. Let's keep on going. Avo miyachten etzlam, but you can give it to him for a short amount of time. Yisrael meniach b'chanuto ad she'elech k'dei milu yoter. Masha'en kein b'goy. Yisrael can leave it in his store if he's going for a walk of a mile in the possession of a ger toshev, which he can't do for a regular guy. First of all, the ger toshev himself doesn't worship wine, so you're not worried that he's going to touch it or he's going to pour it out and do nisuch and yayin esech. A. B. Ulamago goy da asim alma bebeto lo chayshinan, and that the ger toshev is going to allow another guy, a different Ovid Avodazar, to come into his house and touch it. We're also not worried. To kivin de ain lo hana, because he gets no benefit from bekach from allowing him to do that. Eino meni chaliga, he's not going to allow him to touch it. Ula achlufe bizman muad lech lemechash, and to switch it with his own wine, we're not worried with such a short amount of time. So why can you give it to a ger tosha for a short amount of time? Because the things that you'd be concerned about, you don't have to be concerned about. A, he himself is not going to worship with it. B, he's not going to allow a guy to touch it. And C, he's not going to switch it with his own wine. Okay? That's why you give it a short amount of time, just to test you. Why can't you give it for a long amount of time? Why?
He'll switch it with his wine.
He'll switch it with his wine. Pinchas. Okay, good. Now look at Tosfos. Ein mafkidin etzlo yayin afil b'yir sheru b'yisrael. You can't leave wine with the ger tosha for a long amount of time. Perish Rashi, why can't you? L'vishein makbid al maga goy. Because he's not, the ger toshev is not makbid on a guy touching it. He's going to allow a guy to come into a store and touch it. Is that the reason you have in your Rashi? Pinchas, what reason do you have in your Rashi?
He's going to switch it with his wine.
He's going to switch it. So what's Tosfos talking about? How could he quote Rashi? Rashi says explicitly that the reason is because we're worried that what? He's going to switch it. Tosfos quotes Rashi that the reason is what? He's going to allow a guy who worships Ador to touch it. It's not the same reason. Or if we only had that and I stopped you, you could probably come with a reason how it's the same reason. But it's not the same reason. So what happened? How is Tosfos quoting Rashi that you don't have differently in your Vilna Shas over here? How could that be possible? What would you say? How could that be possible? How are you talking?
Rashi.
Say again?
Different versions of Rashi.
Are there different versions of Rashi? How could there be different versions of Rashi?
Someone copied it over differently.
Somebody copied it over differently? Interesting. Okay, David, you're ready ahead. Okay, just stop. Okay, what else? What else could have happened? Anything else could have happened? One, somebody wrote it over differently. Anything else could have happened?
No, different versions of Rashi.
How could there be different versions of Rashi? Say again?
One, see that in the drafts, it's like, I got mixed up. And Baba Kama is like, that looks like.
Yeah, fair. I want to talk about, we'll get back to Baba Kama in a second. Yeah, fair. Yeah, again?
Each saw different versions of Gemara.
Who saw different versions of the Gemara?
Rashi and Tosfot.
No, but now Rashi's quoting, Tosfot is quoting Rashi. We're not talking about the Gemara anymore. These are different versions of Rashi. Yeah.
Perhaps Rashi offered both reasons, and only one made it into ours, and Tosfos was responding to the second.
Interesting. Interesting idea. Interesting idea. David?
You could also have different people confused to be Rashi. Like, I know in Yavamos that we're not sure. We found a version of Rishon. We thought that was Rishon, but it turned out to be someone else.
Okay, well, who would be confused here? Meaning, Tosfos is pretty close to Rashi. Who would be confused? Say again?
The people who published the Vilna Shas.
Let me tell you, if that was true, that would be so astounding. Have you ever heard that Rashi and Avodah Zarah is not Rashi? I mean, you've heard that about... Where have you heard that about? What Masechtas have you heard that about?
Nedarim.
Tamid. Okay, but you never heard that about Avodah Zarah. Okay, so look inside. And this is actually an amazing Tosfos, because Tosfos gives an insight that scholars quote this Tosfos, and others like it, for what you're about to see. V'hikshu Rabbeinu Tam. And Rabbeinu Tam asks al zeh. Dim Cain, if that's true that you're worried that a guy's gonna touch it, I feel the achanami the fisha achiachde milioter kmosh beres v'kunches atzmo ha'ilan ola asor. Then you should even asur it even if he just left for a mile. Tal karchach b'odiyo shu maflig mayri dilo adiyo af begoy muta. Dim Cain lama lo nechash lamaga ove kochav maragil b'chanuto kiven sheno machbid. Okay, let's skip through his reasoning. Let's get to what Rabbeinu Tam says. L'chein nir l'Rabbeinu Tam. Listen, look at it carefully. L'chein nir l'Rabbeinu Tam. Kimo sheperish Rashi. V'higia b'perushim shelo. U'machak hatam. L'vi she'enu makbid. V'katav ein mafkidin l'zman meruba. D'ik l'mecha shechlufei b'yayin shelo sha'asur. K'detani seifa yayinu kishmeno. What happened?
Tosfos switched around Rashi.
Say again?
He switched around Rashi because it didn't make sense.
Oh, that's interesting.
Was that what he said?
That's not what he says, okay. But I think there's another Tosfos that might imply that, but that's interesting. But what does this Tosfos say? Who changed Rashi? Who? Rashi changed Rashi. How did Rashi come out? How did you get this favorite Rashi? Rashi wrote, learn Masechet Avodah Zarah. Right? He started, he learned it, he wrote a parish on it. He was, let's say, 35 when he wrote it, he taught it to his yeshiva, and they learned Avodah Zarah. Okay? What happened? How did he publish this? What press did he go to?
He wrote it in a notebook.
He wrote it in a notebook. How do we know he wrote it in a notebook?
Kuntres.
Okay, he wrote it in a notebook. Yafet, let's say he wrote it in a notebook, whatever a notebook means. And how did anybody know? How did he publish that notebook? What press did he send it to? Say again? He what?
Just like people copied it and then he sent it around.
People copied it and he sent it around. He sent it around? Okay. Talmidim saw it. He said, it's right. You know, so people copied it. They sent it around, right? Rashi, 10 years later, learned Masechet Avodah Zarah again. And you know what? He had new ideas. So what would Rashi do when he wrote Learn Masechet Avodah Zarah again and had new ideas?
Write more.
He would cross out, or what he thinks now is correct, he changed his opinion. He'd cross out certain things and write different things. And then, if you're a Talmud who learned by Rashi when he was 36, 37, you have Peirush Rashi version 1. If you're a Talmud that learns by Rashi after he's 45, you have Peirush Rashi version 2. Here we have an amazing story where Tosfos is telling us, and by the way, you wouldn't even know that. I'm saying, if you were living in Provence, okay, and you just get a copy of Rashi, you don't know what version of Rashi you have, at what era, right? What Tosfos is saying is something amazing. He's saying, I've seen Rashi's hand. he crossed out, he has the manuscript that Rashi worked on, and he crossed this out and he wrote something new. I mean, that's amazing. In Rashi's own hand, he crossed out, wrote something new. And this was his second Madur. This is a second version. There was a second version of Rashi. So when Tosfos is quoting the first Peirush Rashi, you know what he's quoting? The first version of Rashi. And then Rabbeinu Tam afterwards says, I hold like the second version of Rashi. And then if you look later on, look at the big wide line. Vahosif Rashi. You see the big line, Vahosif Rashi in the middle, the Gia, and then Rashi added more to the second thing. We're not going to have time to do it, but Rashi then added more. Some scholars think there was a Mahadura Shlishit, there was a third Mahadura of Rashi that Tosas is saying. I'm not convinced, I think this could just be a reference to the same second one. But what's clear from Tosas is that there are different Mahadurot of Rashi. I have something amazing to share with you. I found it amazing. Because I was in checking the manuscripts of Rashi in the Kitvei Yad room of Hebrew University, and you know what I found? I found the first Rashi. I found the first Rashi. Look at source number one. In Kitvei Yad Parma 3155, it's a manuscript. This is my typing, obviously. It's a manuscript of Rashi. And it says, Ein mafkidin yayin etzlo bebeto, de'eno makbid al maga goy chavero. Avo miyachdin etzlo yayin so amidin levechul vechuchul. Why can't you be mafkid yayin? Because he's eino makbid al maga goy chavero. Is that our Rashi in the Vilna Shas? No. Who says that? Whose Rashi is that? That's the one that Tosfos quotes. This girsa is Rashi's first Mahadura. This is Rashi's first Mahadura. I actually found another example, I don't have time to do it with you, in Hamid Bet, where this manuscript shows another example of Rashi's first Mahadur, his first go-around version of Masechet Avodah Zarah that's changed in the Vilna Shas. We have a different version. So you see, I'm pointing out, you see from here, is that Rashi himself had different versions. There are many versions of Rashi, of the Peirush Rashi. And you pointed out, your name is again?
Ben.
So Ben points out, in Baba Kama, I think we have seven different versions of Rashi. I think there are seven. And this is part of learning Rashi, if you want to learn Rashi seriously, is to not just know the girsa that Rashi had in front of him, but know the girsa of Rashi. Right? What did Rashi say? Now, it could get complicated. I told you the easy things, which is that, oh, Rashi has many Madura. But you know who also added things into Rashi? I think Justin might have said this before. Other people added things into Peirush Rashi. Like his students. Sometimes, you know when Rashi says, Lashon Mori? It's actually his student who's testifying about something that Rashi said. So you have to go through the manuscripts. Sometimes it's complicated. You have to go through the manuscripts to figure out, and at times you can, at times it's more difficult to figure out. There's sometimes the layers are actually not Rashi, but there are other layers. Okay, I wanted to get to a third point in the short amount of time here. Rashi Shita. Now, when I asked you what Ger Toshav was, Justin said that it was the guy who was Makabel Shemitz Bnei Noach. Why did Justin say it was a guy who was Makabel Shemitz Bnei Noach? Can anybody tell me why Justin said that? Except Justin? Yes?
I think it's Rashi Ala Torah.
It's Rashi Ala Torah?
Rambam.
Say again?
Rambam.
It's the Rambam. Okay, we'll get to Rashi Ala Torah. It's the Rambam. And after the Rambam, it became everybody. It was also the Bali Tosfot. It wasn't just the Rambam. It was the Rambam. But after them, it became everybody. And everybody thinks Ger Toshav is Makabel Shemitz Bnei Noach. Everybody thinks that. But if you look at Rashi, the only person who doesn't think that, or is not the only person, but one of the people who don't think that, is Rashi. So if you look at source number three, Rashi says, Ger Toshav. This is in the Torah. This is his Peirush on Vayikra. Afim hu ger o toshav, ve'ezu toshav, kol shekibolav shelo la'avod avodah zarah, ve'ochal nevelot. Anyone who accepts not to worship avodah zarah, who eats nevelot. What do you guys think about that formulation? Yeah.
It seems to be a combination of two of the different opinions that were in the Gemara.
Yeah, it's strange. It's a combination of two different opinions. Reb Meir's opinion was not to Makabel Rezar. Reb Yehuda, and the third opinion was Ger Ochon Nevel. It's Rashi's putting them together. So that's already peculiar. That's A. B, it seems like Rashi, if you had to say, who's he paskening like? Right? It seems like he's paskening like Reb Meir, that all he has to do is not worship Avodah Zarah. Now, if you looked at the Machlokes in the Gemara, without knowing any Rishonim, who would you say we paskin like? Who would you say we paskin like? Why? Because they're the Chachamim, right? Yachid v'Rabim, Halacha k'Rabim. We pass like, but Rashi, in an oddity, paskins like a Shitas Yachid. Look at Rashi in Devarim Perek Yudalat. Gerto, what's Gertosha? Gertosha Shekibo of Shloa Voda Voda Zarva Ochon Nevelot. Same thing. Look at Rashi in Psachim. The Gertosha of Kamar Shekibo of Shloa Voda Voda Zarva Ochon Nevelot. Rashi in Gittin. Gertosha Shekibo of Shloa Voda Voda Zarva Ochon Nevelot. Rashi in Sanhedrin. Shelo Kibo of Shar Mitzvot Shekibo of Shloa Voda Voda Zkochavim. So you see the pattern is that Rashi believes what? That Ger Toshav only needs to do what? To be Makabel, not to worship Avodah Zarah. And for some reason he puts in Ochon Nevelos, which doesn't make any sense. Because there's a two different opinions in the Braisa. So why is he passing like a Shitas Yachid? How is he combining two different opinions? These are all questions that you have, right? Let me add a third question. If you look at source number 8 and 9, when Rashi defines Ger Toshav here, he says, what's Ger Toshav? Ger Toshav Shekibol Avshem Mitzvah Shavu B'nei Noach. Ger Toshav accepts the Sheva Mitzvahs, like the Chachamim. Rashi in source number 9, Ger Toshav Shekibol Avshem Mitzvah B'nei Noach V'Reviyah B'chal. And the Ger Toshav accepts the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach. So we have a contradiction in Rashi. So A, most of the Rashi's paskin like Shitas Yachid. B, Rashi combines two different Shitos. And three, he contradicts himself. How do you explain Shitas Rashi? So what would you say if I stopped here? How would you explain? What would be your strategy to explain Shitas Rashi? What would you think that you should try to do to explain Shitas Rashi? Don't even give me an answer. Tell me your strategy that you would think about. How would you approach the problem?
Make a chiluk.
Make a chiluk. Yafeh. Thank you, Justin. You would make a chiluk. Thank you. And what would the what kind of chiluk would you make? What would you come up with anything? Make something up.
Rashi explained the Havamina, the first two daf.
Rashi explained the Havamina. Okay. Any other chilukim you come up with? It's really hard, you know, in the context of the Gemara. But let me just say that some of these Gemarot are parallel Gemarot. Okay? Meaning, they're the exact same Gemara. And Avodah Zarah Chaf Amid Aleph and Psachim Chaf Aleph Amid Bet, it's the exact same Gemara, the parallel Gemara. Yet Rashi and Psachim says, it's Zolakab Avodah Zarah, and Rashi and Avodah Zarah Shev Mitzvah Bnei Noach. How can you come with a chiluk for that? I'm sure people can. I have no doubt in the imagination that people could come up with. So what's going on over here? How do you explain Shitas Rashi? All of these questions. So, we don't have that much time. So let me just tell you that part of the problem with our learning of Rashi is that we start with Rashi. When you learn a Gemara, who's the first person you learn? Rashi, which is wonderful. When did Rashi live?
In 49th century.
Are you from St. Louis? No, I'm kidding. Merrick. Okay, 1040 to 1105. Rashi lived at 1040. When did the Gemara end? When was the closing of the Gemara? How many hours a day do you spend learning Gemara? When was the closing of the Gemara?
5th century.
5th century. The Bavli closed, let's say, around 490. How many years are there? This one you should get. How many years are there between 1040 and 490?
550.
A lot. Right? Over 500 years. What happened in the 500 years between the closing of the Gemara and Rashi? Did anything happen between that time? Do we know of anything that happened between that time? Did Rashi just come from a vacuum and just was born into the Gemara? What happened?
The Jews left Babylon, so that would probably account for some of the views of changes at some point.
When did the Jews leave Babylon?
I guess about 800-900-ish. I mean, Rashi was in France, the Hunt.
Okay, yafeh. Okay, good. Rashi was in France. How Jews got to France is a good question. But at the time of Rashi, there were hundreds of thousands of Jews in Babel. Hundreds of thousands. At the time of Rashi in Ashkenaz, maybe there was, I don't know, 10,000. Maybe. The communities in Ashkenaz that we know and love were so small, it's amazing. It's like everybody you bump into was a Baalei Tosfot. Okay, I'm exaggerating a little bit. But I'm saying, but a Babel was a pretty serious, they're a pretty serious place. What happened between the closing of the Talmud and Rashi?
In the Sabarayim and the Gaonim all.
So the Sabarayim were, let's say, from 490 to 590. And then the Gaonim. Who were the Gaonim? Did they do it? Did they write anything about the Gemara?
We lost most of their stuff.
What?
Can we lose most of their stuff?
They had things in it. Like how Hilchot does this.
Okay, this is amazing. You've proven all my points in just one little thing. Okay, all these are different people. Okay, Rabbeinu Chanan was in North Africa. He wasn't a Gaon.
Is he a Talmud Rabbi?
Say again.
This is Rabbi. Who is a Talmud Rabbi?
That is an excellent question. It's not. He never was in Bavel. The Gaonim are only. The Gaonim are the people who held the posts as the head of the yeshivas of Sura and Pumbedita. Those are the only people who were the Gaonim. Rabbeinu Chananel quotes Rav Hai Gaon, who was the last of the great Gaonim, who died in 1048, and he quoted 1028, and he quotes him, but he didn't learn. He didn't learn by him. In fact, we have a letter where Rav Hai Gaon complains Rabbeinu Chananel is not asking him enough questions. Because they used to send questions back to the Gaonim. And Rav Hai was upset because he heard about this Rabbeinu Chananel. He wanted him to ask him more questions. But Rabbeinu Chananel did quote him. Rabbeinu Gershom lived where? Who's the Rabbeinu Gershom? Where did he live? No clue. Okay, he was a Rosh Yeshiva of Magenza in Germany. And that's getting closer to Rashi. Okay, and he was in the mid-10th century. Okay? So what I'm showing you is that there was a lot of halacha and a lot of perushim, a lot of comment, a lot of people thinking about the Talmud from the closing of the Talmud to Rashi. And Rashi studied them. He knew them. Where did Rashi learn? Anyone know where Rashi learned? He learned in two places. In Worms and Magenza. He learned in two places. Okay, and from there he inherited the Ashkenaz tradition. And he learned also what the Gaonim said. I want to show you, we don't have time to go into this so much. Let me just show you what one of the Gaonim said, or he's not really a Gaon, but in the Tzkufat of the Gaonim. Look at source number 10. This is the Halachot. I put this in the Halachot Psukot. Oh, I gave the Halachot Psukot. Okay, this is the first. This is potentially the first Perush that we have on the Halachic work that we have in the Tzkufa of the Gaonim. What does he say? How does he define Ger Toshav? Ezu Ger Toshav, Kol HaKofer Ba'avodazara Ba'ochel Nevelot. From the time of the Gaonim until Rashi, that's how everyone thought about Ger Toshav. Rashi was not saying anything new. He was just repeating what he learned. That formulation of taking a little bit of Remeir, a little bit of whatever, that was the Gaonim. It wasn't Rashi. Now that pushes the question back. It doesn't solve the question. Why did the Gaonim say it? I don't have time to go into it. But my point is, it's not Rashi who's saying this. Rashi is just quoting who he learned. But if that's true, then why does Rashi soter himself? Why does he contradict himself? Do you know why Rashi contradicts himself? You know what the great chiluk is? It's my own thought. I don't know. I think it's true. You see, Rashi, what he did was, when he wrote his Perush, he wrote his Perush based on what he learned in the Yeshivot. And by that explains some of the contradictions. Sometimes he learned the Masechet in Magenza, and he learned a different Masechet in Worms. And he wrote down, from his Machberet, he wrote down the Perush that he learned from his Rebbeim. And sometimes they clashed. Because Rashi didn't write a Sefer Achidah. He didn't write a unified work. He wasn't one of the Baalei Tosfot who was harmonizing all the texts. But in this halacha, everyone thought that Ger Tosh was that. So how could Rashi write Shev Mitzvahs B'nei Noach? Because this, notice the two times that Rashi wrote, what's the common denominator between the two times that Rashi writes that it's Shev Mitzvahs B'nei Noach?
Masechet
Avodah Zarah. Who said that? Thank you, Pinchas. It was Masechet Avodah Zarah. Masechet Avodah Zarah was not studied for long periods of time in the Yeshivot in Ashkenaz. They skipped it. And we have evidence that some of the great contemporaries, Rabbeinu Gershom, didn't even know it, or didn't know specific things about it. They weren't as intensely involved in Masechet Zarah, which is peculiar, and that's a whole other conversation of why. And therefore, when Rashi did his commentary on Masechet Zarah, he was much more of a pioneer. And he was able to make his own way. Much more so than in the other Masechtas when he's writing over this, his notebooks. And therefore, I suggest, he was able to look at a machlokes, where we always paskin like the Chachamim, and say we paskin like the Chachamim. And in fact, all the Baalei Tosfos after Rashi hold the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. Because there, when you're independent of the Gaon and before you, it's obviously Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, because it's a Shitas Chachamim. Okay, let me summarize and close. For this point, by the way, even before I summarize, there are different steps to deal with contradictions of Rashi. Before you get to the conceptual split, which could also be true. First, you have to see, did he contradict himself? You have to check the manuscript. Sometimes other people's editions, sometimes it's not Rashi who did the contradiction, it's somebody else who made the contradiction. Even if he did, it could be that he changed his opinion. He crossed down whatever, and it reflects different tkufot, different periods of his lives. Alternatively, you could check the context. Rashi is not writing a Sefer Achidah, but he often analyzes based on the context. And finally, you could check the Masorah that he's basing it on. Sometimes the Masorah is from Agensa, sometimes it's from... Ooh, is this chut gdola? Are there others here? I didn't know. Okay. Sometimes he writes from against us. Sometimes he's right from worms. In this case, I think it's a special situation because there's no strong mesorah of Masechet Avodah Zarah. To summarize, if we're learning Shitas Rashi, how do you do Rashi? The first thing you should do is check the text of the Gemara that Rashi had in front of him. That's the basis. What's Rashi commenting on? Secondly, check the text of Rashi. Is the Tfus Vilna correct? Is it the only girsa? Are there other girsot? And finally, understand the nature of the work. What's the context of the Gemara? What did the previous era say on this issue? Is Rashi being mechade something, or is just repeating over what was said before? These are all tips and strategies of understanding Rashi. Now, I mentioned at the beginning that most of what I say is not new in the history of learning, but it's new to you. Am I right that the things I've said were new to you? Am I right about that? Okay. So why is it new to you? Why is this new to you? By the way, does this make sense what I said? Do you have to know the Gemara? It's pretty obvious. Like, once you hear it, isn't it like, how can you think otherwise? So what happened? So certainly in the medieval era and into the modern era, everyone knew most of these ideas. Everyone knew to check the manuscripts of the Gemara and to check the manuscripts of the Rishonim. How could you not? Right? If you were living in an era of Kitvei Yad, everyone knew there were different versions of the Gemara. Right? That's why Rashi says Hachi Gar Sinan. What does he mean when he says Hachi Gar Sinan? He knew that there were different versions of the Gemara. Everybody knew that. Everybody knew you had to establish the Gemara in front of you before you're commenting on. Right, it was also widely known. The different schools of the Rishonim were based on, and everyone knew the earlier traditions that existed beforehand. But things changed in the modern era. And this is obviously a longer conversation. What changed in the modern era? What would you say? What changed?
Talmud became less for just the elite and more for the common person.
Oh, that's a much later change, but that's true. That is true, certainly after Artscroll. But even before that, yes, Pinchas?
You get like a uniform text.
How do you get a uniform text?
Zlomashas.
The printing press. Before you get to the Vilna, the printing press. Right, the end of the 15th century, beginning of the 16th century, you have a printing press. So now you have a uniform page. And over time, you get an accepted text, an accepted tradition. And you should know that the early Acharonim who lived through the Tkufa, the beginning of the printing press, were really worried about the printing press. They thought it was an invention that had carried a lot of potential downfall of ossifying the text, is one example. And that, in effect, is what happened. To the point where the average student doesn't understand manuscripts, doesn't understand Girsa differences. He has a Vilna Shas, he thinks that came from Moshe Mitzrayim. And at best, he looks at a Bach or a Grud. How did the Bach and Grud know? Well, how did the Bach and the Grud know to change texts? They didn't. It was Misfara. I don't think they compared manuscripts. It's really interesting the evolution of how to learn. But let's move on from there. So the first thing is that there's a uniform page. And that changed people's consciousness. Like the text that used to be a little flexible became ossified. Secondly is the way we begin learning. There's no mavo. There's no sense of history. Who's a Gaon? Rabbeinu Gershom? Rabbi Chananel? Well, we don't know. When did the Talmud end? When did Rashi start? We don't know. We're all thrown into learning. What was the first year you guys started learning seriously? What would you say? And just answer the question only if you're not from TABC. What was the first year you started learning seriously? It's not a trick question.
Last year
in Hakotel. Right? How did they start teaching you? I'm not playing Hakotel. This is yeshivot all around. How did they start teaching you? You just throw yourself in. There's no mavo, there's no introduction. There's no history of halacha. There's no what is safrut tanaim. Do you know all the Tanaimic literature? What is all the Tana, all the literature that the Tanaim wrote? Do you know? What? Tosefta. What else? Okay, Midrash Halacha. And what are the Midrash Halacha? Is it... Okay, you know, we don't have time to go into this now. So the Safrut Tanaim, the Safrut Amoraim, all the Amoraic literature, and then the Gaonim, and then the Rishonim, and who followed who and learned from it. We have no Mavo. There's no orientation to help us understand how to learn. And finally, this is a longer conversation, but of course the revolution of the conceptual Derech, that the Brisker world sweeps the Yeshiva world. And all debates and contradictions are resolved conceptually. Right, and that's what somebody who did it, Avi did it in the beginning. That was amazing. You saw a stira, you've resolved it conceptually. Now, the problem with this is that it misses some basic facts and truths about learning Gemara. Now, what I told you is not chas v'shalom against brisk, which is the derech that I use to learn also, but enables one to root the conceptual approach in more exacting texts and apply it more accurately. It's not that every situation, it's not that we eschew conceptual chilukim. It's just you should make them when there's reason to make them. And you should know that. And when there's no reason to make them, you shouldn't say foolish things. So how do we root our learning into something that's more exact and more accurate and more real and more truthful? And that we could build this conceptual approach on much more solid stuff. Now, finally, what happened in the 21st century and why I think today is different is a couple of things. First of all, the Kitvei Yad is online. It's accessible to you. Do you know how long it'll take you to find every single manuscript of an extant Gemara? And that if you check online, how long will it take you to do? It'll take you 45 seconds. There's a website, Lieberman/institute.com. Every single manuscript on every Gemara that we have, that's extant, that we have, including Geniza fragments, Geniza, they're still researching. There's another Geniza website you could check. But very simply, it'll take you 5 minutes. You get every single manuscript. Before it's that they get there, 5 minutes, you'll know every manuscript that ever was written on the thing. 5 minutes. It's accessible to you. Okay, you have to be a manui, and your institution has to sign up. But it's if you learn now in the base medrash with laptops, in 5 minutes you know every gemara. Anytime you're doing anything seriously, it'll be easy for you. And it's not just the Kisviyat of the Gemara. What they're doing now in the libraries in Hebrew, you have a friend, everything that is online, he's attaching, there's a link. You can have Kisviyat of all the Rishonim and everything. Everything is going online. It'll take you 1 minute, you'll know everything. So all the work that I had to do in the manuscript room of Hebrew University, which isn't accessible to people across the world, is going to be accessible to everybody, you know, Bezrat Hashem, in the next 10, 20 years, as much as we have, it's continuing out. That's one. And secondly, there's a development to the field of history of halacha. It's much more developed, and there's a much more advanced sense of our history. There are much more books written. You could study it, you could learn it yourself, and I think every yeshiva has to have a serious mavo, introduction, orientation of what is halachic literature simultaneously as they throw the students into the text in the Am Shel Talmud, which is also important. There should be a mavo and orientation, and we now have the ability, because the field has advanced in the past 20, 30, 40 years to such a point where it's really, there's an easy clarity, an easy way to give access to people some basic information that'll help them and change their learning lives. It's almost got to the point that if you don't do these things, it's rashlanut. It's negligence. If you're treating a Gemara seriously and you can get every mazir and you know everything that the Rishonim saw in it and you don't do it, it's almost to the point, once it gets out there, it's mamash rashlanut. It's just negligence. But if you take learning seriously, then you have to take using the tools and the strategies that are available to you in the 21st century today that are literally at your fingertips, you have to take them seriously as well. And I think, Bezrat Hashem, that we'll see the learning world move forward in this direction. You see it already in some of the yeshiva's journals, and with this I'll close. And I think could be in the future, we'll continue to be filled with Baruch Hashem, with brisk and conceptual chilukim, but we'll continue on a very strong base, strongly rooted in the right texts and the right facts. It's been wonderful to be with you. A wonderful rest of the evening.